Good morning. Welcome to the Ag Policy Committee. We've got some things that we're going to be doing today, so we'll go ahead and get started right away. We do have a quorum. We are going to start with actually House File 1071, which is the Omnibus Ag Policy Bill. And as we begin the policy bill, we do have some people from the department to talk about the bill. And in the meantime, we've got some... I'll do that. Are you ready? So I will move House File 1071 be recommended to pass and be referred to Government Operations.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Greta Gothier, Director of Government Relations at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. House File 1071 is the Department of Agriculture's policy and technical bill. Contains a number of policy provisions and technical changes that will allow our agency to function more effectively and more efficiently. I'm going to walk us through the bill, Madam Chair, and I will start with Article 1. Yes, ma'am.
It reminds me, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we do have an amendment that we could move also that will take out one of the articles of the bill, and that might be appropriate. I've lost We do have Amendment A7, and the A7 amendment is going to be distributed here.
Madam Chair, to facilitate the process, which article did you say was being removed?
Article 2.
Article 2. All right, thank you.
So, this is mostly a technical amendment, and I will ask Ms. Gothier to just talk about the amendment as it comes around so that we know what this amendment does.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment pertains to Article 2 of our Technical and Policy Bill, and Article 2 is the Minnesota Agricultural Water Quality Certification Program. This section of the bill was also introduced as a standalone bill, House File 1175, which this committee has already heard and passed out, and which is working its way through other committees today. So, I believe that this bill on page 13, line 2, would delete the A. Oh, excuse me, Madam Chair. I misspoke. This amendment has to do with the repealer in Article 1 of our bill. Article 1 is a number of policy and technical changes. This amendment, the A7 amendment, on page 13, lines 13.3 through 13.7, would delete the second part of that repealer there, which is under subparagraph B. All of that is listed there are rules from Chapter 15, which pertain to seeds. And the reason we need to delete this is that an earlier version of this bill had four articles before it was introduced, before it was sent to the reviser. One of those articles was recodification and modernization of the seed statutes. If you recall, Madam Chair, members who were here last year, we did go through our grain statutes last year, update them, consolidate, modernize, and we're in a process of doing that kind of systematically. This year we were going to be looking at our seed statutes, but there were a number of issues that came up that we decided to hold that portion of the bill over and discuss it further over the interim with stakeholders, Madam Chair. So our original plan was to move some of our seed rules into statute. We do that because we think it makes them more visible to the public and to the stakeholders. easier to understand, and this is kind of a systematic, again, systematic process we're going through. We did delete that one article that we decided not to pursue this year, but we did not end up deleting our repeal of the rules, which would have been in the new statute we were going to propose. So we just need to delete this repealer so that those rules remain in effect as they have been for decades until next year when we come back with revisions, updates, modernizations of the seed statutes.
Thank you, Ms. Gauthier. And in addition to that, we also are deleting Article 2, as you began to...
Yes,
so in this,
sure.
Yes.
Deleting Article 2 because it is moving separately as a standalone bill.
Yes. So any comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. That amendment's adopted. And now we should be able to have you go through the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, a number of the technical changes in Article 1 pertain to Chapter 18B, which is our pesticide statutes, and I have with me today John Peckham from our Pesticide and Fertilizer Division, who's going to walk you through a number of those technical changes.
Welcome to the committee. Just identify yourself for the record, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Peckham. I'm the manager of the Inspection and Enforcement Section of the Pesticide and Fertilizer Management Division.
Can I ask you to move the mic toward you a little bit better, or we might have to raise the volume. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Okay. That better?
Yes.
Madam Chair? Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'll go through these technical changes. They do not expand any of the regulatory requirements, and there are no significant policy changes in these amendments. Lines 3.3 to 3.6 adds a definition of a bulk pesticide storage facility to the statute, to 18B01 in definitions. That does not add any additional requirements for persons that are having to get a permit under Minnesota Statutes 18B14. Madam Chair, if you would like me to just move through these, I can do that.
Yes, please do so.
Madam Chair, if I may, just to add something about that section 2 there on line on page 3, lines 3.3 to 3.6, that also does not expand the number of people or entities in the state that would have to obtain a bulk pesticide storage facility permit.
Madam Chair, members of the committees, line 3.7 to 4.2 relate to taking away a requirement that counties who are participating in our waste pesticide collection program have to keep records of their waste collections. And it allows the department to go forward and evaluate some of the data from the last 4 years and then provide a report to the legislature regarding the waste pesticide program. And we're hoping that by doing that, we can provide some additional analysis and recommendations to the legislature. And Madam Chair, I'll just proceed through then.
Yes, please. Just go ahead.
Lines 4.3 to 4.7, technical change again. It simply takes the word at application sites out. It's been kind of a misnomer for many years because it actually talks about any site without safeguards, and it adds a requirement regarding open drains. We periodically go through situations when there is a drain and a pesticide storage area where products can, if they're spilled, get into water supplies, both stormwater and sanitary sewers. Alrighty, Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
Okay, lines 4.8 through 4.23, this combines two sections in existence, sections 5 and 6, puts them all into section 5. It talks about filling application equipment from water supplies. It defines, it pertains to both public waters and waters of the state. And it clearly defines what requirements there are for backflow prevention devices under the Minnesota Plumbing Code to protect water supplies in the state. And it prohibits a cross connection between a water supply and a piece of pesticide application equipment. And the reason that that is in there is if the backflow prevention device is not installed properly and there's a cross connection prior to the backflow prevention device, there can be backflow into water supplies. And it, we wanted to make sure that we retain the existing language from subdivision six, that related to aquatic pesticide applications. Obviously, aquatic applications are in water anyway. So,
we do have a question for you, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sir, on line 4.10, would application equipment include a truck with a water tank in the back of it?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Representative, nurse tanks would not be necessarily part of that, depending on how it gets done. A bottom fill water supply tank would be under this. The water tank where there's pesticide mixed with water would be included.
Representative Anderson? Okay. All right. Go ahead.
All righty. Lines 4.24 through 5.4 talk about pesticide handling restrictions. And in this section, we're attempting to prevent incidents, contamination of groundwater and surface water. We're very much trying to make it clear as to what types of requirements there are to ensure protection of groundwater and surface water. We've added a couple words on load and park and drains and sewers into these requirements. And one of the issues I know that has come up is the issue of ditches. And just a quick check with our incident response people has indicated to us that we want to very much dissuade people from mixing and loading and parking in areas where there are ditches because spills like that are very difficult to manage. There are utilities in most right-of-ways in ditches. They're difficult to clean up. They're very expensive. And then, of course, when there's a cleanup occurring, there are traffic concerns. And we want to just make sure that folks know that and are aware that, you know, we're trying to prevent things from happening.
All right. And Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Madam Chair. Well, a lot of applicators park their trucks or rigs along a township road ditch. Are you saying that's now going to be illegal?
Madam Chair?
Yes, go ahead.
Representative, we're not saying that parking is going to necessarily be illegal, but what we're saying is if it's in a situation where if there is an incident that occurs as a result of a spray rig tipping over or something like that, that would be something we would not want to have happen.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Madam Chair. Well, obviously nobody wants that to happen, but if they are coming back to refill their tank and such by their truck parked in along a road ditch, township road, how is that going to be handled?
Madam Chair?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, Representative, I'm not sure when you say how would it be handled, you know what I mean, enforced, is that what you're...
Well, I guess I'm trying to get at this language says you can't fill application equipment along a road ditch, and that is happening out in the country. So just exactly, you say you try to persuade people not to do it, but just exactly what does this language mean? Is it going to be illegal to park along a ditch to refill a tank? Just what is this saying?
Mr. Peckham.
Madam Chair, Representative, what we're really trying to do is dissuade people from doing this. The existing language essentially says the same thing. It's not very clear, and that's what the problem is. I don't know of any situations where we've ever taken enforcement action against somebody that is parking on a right-of-way or something like that, trying to fill application equipment. We're just trying to make sure that this is good guidance for people.
Okay. Mr. Peckham, you can go ahead.
All right, Madam Chair. Lines 5.5 through...
Oh, Representative Faust.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you give me an idea how many incidents do you have on a year where something like this has happened, where somebody has parked along the road and in the filling process there's a spill and it causes a problem?
Madam
Chair.
Mr. Peckham. Representative, there are very few incidents that occur like this. Probably the most problematic ones are on a soft shoulder where a tank, you know, tips in, a rig tips into the ditch.
Okay, thank you very much.
And in those instances, we're really looking at trying to clean the spill up. That's what our main cause or concern is.
All right.
Madam Chair?
Go ahead.
All right, lines 5.5 through 7.16. What we're trying to do in this section is ensure that unintended payments to the Department of Agriculture do not occur. However, if they do occur, that we are not in a position to have to refund dollars to the persons that submitted them. And we're concerned about both saving people money in terms of sending money to us that we are not due, although it does happen, and ensuring that if we do get those dollars, that we are not in a position to have to spend an exorbitant amount of money to refund very small amounts of money. And again, this is simply for non-agricultural pesticides, which is our one category of pesticide products in the state. So, and then, Madam Chair, lines and members of the committee, lines 7.17 through 9.8. These are all requirements that change the word distribute in statute to offer for sale. And what we're trying to do in this situation is ensure that we're not pulling people into the regulatory requirements unnecessarily. Distribute has a very longer, much more defined meaning than offer for sale. What we're really trying to get at is just people who are offering for sale in these requirements.
Okay.
All right. And Madam Chair, members of the committee, lines 9.9 to 9.18, we're really changing the wording in the definition of what has been called a storage handling incident response and disposal plan to be very simple, to be simply an incident response plan. And we want to, again, focus on incidents, spills, and things like that. And we want the regulated party to tell us in a plan what actions they're going to take to prevent incidents and respond to incidents. Storage and handling are already governed in some of our other rules as well as disposal. So the other part of this is we want to make sure that the individuals who have to do these plans give us the same information as the information we already have on the forms that we have. And we're very open to electronic formats so that folks can keep those on a hard drive, on a computer, on a website, that sort of thing. And Madam Chair, that is all I have for my part.
Thank you. Ms. Gauthier.
Madam Chair, if there are no questions, I would like to go back and pick up the few sections that Mr. Peckham did not cover. Pardon me. Madam Chair, Article 1, Section 1 is a change dealing with the Department's Livestock Investment Grant Program. And on lines 235 through 3.2, it's merely removing the definition of qualifying period, which is in a rather convoluted format there. And we intend to just strictly go by calendar year, so simplifying that to make the application and granting process easier and more efficient. And then, Madam Chair, if members would forward to page 9, where Mr. Peckham left off, section 14, commissioner duties. This has are a couple changes here having to do with the Minnesota Organic Advisory Task Force. Just three very small changes here. One on line 1013, in the listing of the membership, instead of saying three farmers using organic agriculture methods, we would like to say three organic farmers. On line 10.27, we would like to have three-year terms for the members instead of staggered two-year terms. It's an efficiency measure, Madam Chair. It's easier for us if people just have three terms, and I think the members of the board would prefer that as well, or excuse me, the members of the task force. And then on line 1029, we would like to extend the existence of this task force through fiscal year 16, ending June 30th, 2016. Moving forward, section 15 applies to the Next Gen Energy Board and simply extends the expiration date for the Next Gen Energy Board from June 30th of 2014 to June 30th of 2015. Section 16 has to do with our agricultural growth, research, and innovation program. This is new language which would allow the department to make grants for 1, 2, or 3 year projects. So getting more flexibility in the length of projects that could be funded with those agri dollars, it would require the department to come back in those multi-year projects that are granted money. We would come back every year and do a check-in, reevaluation. But it would give us some flexibility and allow us to look at programs or projects that are greater in length than 1 year. Section 17, Madam Chair, deals with the Rural Finance Authority's restructured loan program. The Rural Finance Authority was created after the farm crisis in the 1980s. It has, and at the time, had five core loan programs available, one of which was a restructuring loan. pardon me, Madam Chair, got a frog this morning. On line 12.4, well, backing up, these loans are funded through bonds that, of course, are sold by the state like regular bonding procedures. The borrower pays back the loan amount plus interest. And then the department pays the loan amount plus interest back and so forth, pays back the bondholder. When this program was begun in the 1980s, it was a severe financial crisis, and it was a difficult period for many farmers. And so the language on 12.4 was put in that if there was a prepayment of the loan, that there would be no penalty. Madam Chair, things have changed, and without being able to charge a penalty, the department is, we are not able to cover our interest. Thank you. Madam Chair, Arlen is the best, yes, best page ever. He brought me a drink of water.
Absolutely.
This would allow us, Madam Chair, in the era that we live in now, with the farm economy being in a different place than it was in 1988-89, for us to go ahead and, like most lending institutions do, it's common practice, we would be able to collect a prepayment penalty and therefore cover that interest that would be otherwise lost to the bondholders. Sections 18 and 19, Madam Chair, I'll take you back again to last year, and for members not familiar, as I said earlier, we're going through some of our statutes and trying to consolidate, modernize, simplify. We did this last year with our grain statutes, with which were scattered across numerous chapters. We brought them together, and in the monumental task of that, we had a couple few tiny things that we forgot to link up in statute. So sections 18 and 19 are technical changes and links that were inadvertently missed during last year's session. Madam Chair, section 20 pertains to E85, and this is an issue that the Department of Agriculture has worked with the petroleum retailers and also with the ethanol stakeholders and also with the Department of Commerce and the Department of Revenue. It is simply updating Minnesota's definition of E85 to be in accordance with the most recent version of the National standards. The national standards are specifications from the ASTM. As you can see on line 1227, our definition in the state used to link to the 07 standards, and we are proposing that they link to the standards that were promulgated and the specs that were promulgated in 2011. By doing this, we bring our state into conformance with federal law, and so for the purposes of the Department of Commerce in regulation and labeling so forth, and the purposes of the Department of Revenue with tax issues and any credits that may accrue to station owners, this will allow those two systems to move forward and bring us into conformance with the feds. Madam Chair, finally, in the repealer that remains on line 13.2, these two sections in 18B that are being repealed are simply the sections that were combined on page 4 of the bill, page 4, section 5. Mr. Peckham referred to combining two old sections and bringing them up to date and more clearly specifying those things. So we're deleting the old language here.
Thank you. Representative Falk has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a clarification in section 20. It says greater than 50%. Is it 50 or is it 51%? I thought that I saw language that showed 51% and some other pieces moving here. I just wanted to get clarification on that.
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Falk. I believe it is supposed to be 51%, but I have... if that isn't another piece of legislation that you are familiar with.
Representative Paul.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Ms. Gauthier, you said it's supposed to be 51 or 50, because the bill here says 50, and I thought it was 51, but maybe I'm mistaken, but I think we should just try to get that to be consistent. I know because this is moving in multiple bills. One of them is a bill I have. That's the Omnibus Weights and Measures bill.
Ms. Gauthier.
Madam Chair, Representative Falk, I am not certain at this time if it is more than 50. I'm assuming that what I have here is correct because I got this language from the Department of Revenue. And I don't see anyone from the Department of Revenue in the room. But I can certainly check into that in between this and the next stop of the bill and make sure that we get that squared away.
That'd be fine.
Okay. Thank you. All right. So go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would now direct members' attention to Article 3 of the bill, which begins on page 17. And, Madam Chair, in 2009, the legislature created the Minnesota Noxious Weed Advisory Committee to advise the commissioner on issues pertaining to noxious weed law. And the committee has gone through the statutes with a fine-tooth comb and has proposed to the commissioner, and the commissioner is recommending these updates and modernizations to the statute. There are three areas of some substance here, Madam Chair, and I can go over those. And if you would like detailed information, I have experts from our department here as well. Direct members' attention to line 1725, section 5, noxious weed categories. This is some new language that would be inserted after the definitions portion of the noxious weed statutes. And simply what the committee is recommending here is that we be more specific in how we define the ways that the categories of noxious weeds. So prohibited noxious weeds on line 1728 would be those that need to be controlled or eradicated on all lands. And then if you turn the page at the top on lines 18.3 and 18.6, the committee is proposing that we create a noxious weed eradication list and a noxious weed control list. Then we would have a restricted noxious weeds category, that weeds that are widely distributed, but the only feasible means of control for them is to keep them out of the state through importation, sale, or transport. And then specially regulated plants would be noxious weeds that may be native species or may not be native species, and may have demonstrated economic value, but also have a potential to cause some economic damage in non-controlled environments. And finally, the county noxious weeds would be a category of noxious weeds that counties take action to designate as such and manage. So, Madam Chair, this is simply taking a very general definition of noxious weed, if you will, and breaking it down into categories that pertain to the methods by which we would address these noxious weeds in the state. The next substantive issue is on the following page, page 19, section 9. This is an issue brought to the department by metropolitan area counties. Under the current language, if a noxious weed or a propagating part of a noxious weed is transported, the person transporting it is supposed to get a permit from the county. Well, with the Metro counties came to us and said this was a costly and difficult to implement requirement. And so, Madam Chair, again, some of these statutes in noxious weed law are amongst our oldest in the department, and even older than some of our food safety statutes. And so dating back not to the 20th century, but to the 19th century. So what we worked out a solution here, which would be that as long as someone like a landowner, a homeowner, transporting a noxious weed they dug up in their garden, for example, to a county compost facility or other area that would be designated by the department, and we would designate those areas and post them on our website. If I, as a landowner, am and transporting a noxious weed I dug up in my garden, I simply have to put it in an enclosed bag while I take it to the compost site and then dump it out so that parts of it do not get spread inadvertently. And the county, we will work with the counties on educating the public about that. I think it's something that I know I, as a gardener, do, and I'm suspecting a lot of people put their material to go to the compost pile into a bag to take it to the compost pile. But this simply lines up the statute so that the county, there is no issue with counties. The third substantive change proposed by the Noxious Weed Advisory Committee, Madam Chair, and recommended by the Commissioner, would be sections 10 and 11. The committee would like to expand its authority to be, or its area of recommend of advice, shall we say, to include implementation of the new noxious weed law should it be passed into statute, and to assist the commissioner in developing management criteria and making recommendations to the commissioner on those criteria. And then finally, in section 11, the committee would like to add a member from the Minnesota Association of County Land Commissioners and to be able to bring other members to the table, other relevant experts to the table as needed for the committee's work in providing advice to the commissioner. Madam Chair, the repealer deleting subdivisions 3 and 5 is old language that is being clarified and expanded under the new delineation of different categories of noxious weed. With that, Madam Chair, that's the end of the bill, and I'd be happy to stand for questions.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Looking at page 18, lines 27 and 28, it says counties are solely responsible. What help does the state give counties, both financially and advice-type things, as far as taking care of noxious weeds in each county, Ms. Grothier?
Ms. Grothier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize. Could I ask what page that was again? I apologize.
Page 18.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Lines 27 and 28, I think, is what he's referring to.
Madam Chair, I'd like to bring Geir Friso from our agency down. He is the director of our Plant Protection Division and can speak more specifically.
Okay, welcome to the committee, and introduce yourself for the record, please.
Thank you. My name is Geir Friso. I'm the director of the Plant Protection Division. Madam Chair, Representative, I believe the question was whether or not the state provides any resources to counties, and the short answer is no. There are some general funds, about $100,000, that support one position within the Department of Agriculture, but there is no pass-through funding that goes to counties, so those are solely supported by the counties and the townships themselves.
However, Madam Chair, that one staff person, of course, does work with counties, and an example of that would be the language on page 19 that I just explained regarding the transport of noxious weed parts back and forth.
And we provide annual training for counties and townships as well.
Representative Anderson? Good? Okay. All right. Any other questions? Yes, Representative Quisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair Pompey. If I go back to page 4, and I've been rereading the the pesticide restrictions area over and over, and I understand the intent, and I'm just wondering if, Ms. Gauthier, if you would be amenable to an oral amendment of just taking the words "or park" out and leaving it as fill, clean, or unload. I just see a situation where I'll be back here with a constituent who says, you know what, I pulled off the side of the road, I answered a cell phone call, and I got caught on this. I understand that we're not trying to put people in an unfair regulatory situation. I can just see us back here on a technical change, and then I'm wondering if we couldn't address that today.
Ms. Gauthier.
Madam Chair, I would like to, I think that would be fine. My technical staff are saying that would be fine, Madam Chair.
What I'm going to ask is just if Mr. Sullivan can put that into correct terminology, and I think you've hit on something. So, Colby, can you help us with that?
Madam Chair and members, Representative Kreshaw's amendment would be on page 4, line 26, before unload, insert or, and before pesticide, delete or park. So it would read a person may not fill, clean, or unload pesticide application equipment.
Is that what you're looking at, Representative Kreshaw?
Yes, Madam Chair, unless we can get a delete all in there, but otherwise this is good. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I appreciate the amendment. I don't think it goes far enough because, again, if they stop and unload their equipment on a roadside, I think the word unload should be stricken. And I'm fine with clean. They shouldn't clean anything along a road ditch. But even if they would fill water or something along a road ditch, I think fill, unload, or park should all be stricken from that line 4.26.
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm trying to wrap my head around this. And does this apply to other types of pesticides besides agricultural? I mean, are we dealing with mosquito control pesticides and other types of things, or is this?
Yes.
I'm trying to understand that.
Sure.
And the other thing I have too is, I mean, I understand that maybe the reason why you would want some of this, because if you do have, you know, a ditch where you've got water rapidly running through it, and, you know, there are people who are inherently less cautious than others. And, I mean, that's why we typically have the rules is to, you know, most of the people don't cause a problem. But when you do have, you know, a person that does cause a problem, they kind of ruin it for everybody. And I do, you know, think you have to have some enforcement. So, I mean, there are cases where, you know, we know there's a lot of water flowing through a ditch in the spring. And if you have a spill there, it could get into a whole number of areas. And maybe you shouldn't be filling, you know, on that side of the township road. Or maybe you could go... You know, there's kind of some common sense things, but there's just, it seems like you almost have to have some of these rules to.
Why don't we ask Ms. Gauthier or Mr. Peckham to answer that, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Falk. Good questions. First of all, let me assure you that we do not have Department of Agriculture employees driving up and down township roads looking for people and where they're parked. But just a light humor there. we have way too many things to do, Madam Chair. But in the event, I think I can have Mr. Peckham speak to your amendment. Just to point out, though, that if we did delete the word fill, if you look down to line 431, that's the language that currently exists, Madam Chair, and it does say fill or clean. And that language was put in 1989 with the groundwater protection statute. So that has been there for quite some time and has been something that's been tested and true. So there'd be some concern, I think, about going backwards from the 1989 groundwater protection law. But Mr. Peckham can speak more to Representative Falk's.
Yes.
Madam Chair.
Go ahead, Mr. Peckham.
As Ms. Gauthier said, the fill and clean have been in there for a long, long time. In terms of removing unloading, I think that would be fine to remove the word unload. the entire goal here is to prevent incidents, to protect groundwater and surface water. So if we can agree on that, that would be perfectly acceptable.
All right. Representative Kreshaw.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And yes, I can tell you one of the effects this will have when I go back to my district, I can say the red flags won't be flying over little words. So thank you very much.
All right. And Representative Falk, you had your question answered. Okay. And, okay, we do have the amendment. And the amendment, as it reads right now, is to insert or before unload and delete or park. Now, I think that there was maybe a modification to that amendment that you were requesting, Representative Kreisha, or Representative Anderson?
Madam Chair, I would just want to amend Representative Kreisha's oral amendment to add or delete the word unload as well as park, and I think that was acceptable.
Okay. And he's willing to accept that as a modification to his amendment. And Mr. Sullivan.
Madam Chair and members, the amended amendment would be on page 4, line 26. After fill, delete the comma and insert or. And before pesticide, delete comma, unload, comma, or park. So the language would read, a person may not fill or clean pesticide application equipment.
And that's what we all understand. Okay.
I'll move that amendment.
Thank you. All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Motion prevails. That amendment's adopted.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. Okay. So I think, are there any questions? Otherwise, we do have amendments. And so I'm going to start. We'll have a number of amendments here that we'll be distributing. And I'm going to start with this. This amendment will be the A2 amendment, and it is something that refers to line 3.32 in the bill. It is something that the counties requested, I believe. So I'm going to see if Anna Lee is here, but okay. I think Ms. Gauthier can address what the issue is.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. This is an issue that was brought to the department, and we've been working with the Association of Minnesota Counties on it. This pertains to the collection of waste pesticide, which under the Groundwater Act of 1989, the department is required to collect or to arrange for the collection of all ag and non-ag waste pesticide in Minnesota. We have contracted with a number of counties to do this for us, as they are already out collecting household hazardous waste. So, and for many years, the counties have been recording what they collect, which involves weighing what they collect at each stop that they make on their travels in collecting, weighing it, measuring, etc., recording it. We have been collecting this data since 1989, and the counties have asked us if we could work with them as to a more efficient way of collecting this data and figuring out exactly what we need in this data. So we have agreed to this language here on page 3 would suspend the collection of this data for 2014 and 2015. And the county's amendment here, the A2 amendment, is mainly asking that that would be also in effect for the remainder of fiscal year 13, and changing the effective date of this to be the day following final enactment for the collection, simply saying that their waste collection staff would not have to stop and weigh and record the data. If that is in the intent of the legislature for the upcoming biennium, they could cease doing that in the remainder of the fiscal 13. And the department is fine with that amendment.
All right. Are there any questions about this? Otherwise, I'll move the A2 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. That amendment's adopted. And we have a few more amendments. We have heard the biofuel bill here, in this committee, and what I would like to do is move the A6 amendment, which would bring the biofuel bill into this bill so that it's actually traveling separately. It's been amended in Commerce last evening with the final language that the task force approved, and now we'd like to be able to just also have it in this policy bill. So I believe that the department is okay with that, since we're also doing it separately. But I do, once you get this, I do have an oral amendment to this amendment, and I apologize for that, but it was something we caught last night. And that is, for those of you, on the amendment of the A6, on line 3.31, because we changed some language, we actually, at the end of that line, clause 2, we have to change at that number to 1, and in parentheses have two little I's, II, because it's that's the clause we're referring to rather than clause 2. So clause 1, II, is what we're going to do for the oral amendment. So all in favor of the oral amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. That amendment's adopted. Now, the full amendment is the A6. So, yes, Representative Hamilton.
So, Madam Chair, this language is identical to the bill that we heard earlier?
It is not identical to the bill we heard earlier. There was an amendment that we put on in Commerce last night. And I will, if you want to speak to that, I can have somebody come down to speak to what that was. Yes. So I'm going to ask... So as you come to the table, if you'd identify yourself for the record, and please indicate what the changes were.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Melissa Ron. I'm with Frederickson Byron. I represent GEVO, which was one of the members of the task force. The group, the language initially, essentially had the same intent as the language that you see before you, but because we wanted to reinstitute the automatic step up to E15 should they get their full waiver, we put the greater of back in, and just for clarification, made the 10%
high. Could you indicate where you are, actually?
I apologize, Madam Chair. Yes, if you're looking at Section 7, that's where all the changes took place, specifically in lines 3.1 through 3.10. Essentially, 3.1 and 3.2 was clarification for our petroleum industry friends, who wanted to show that they're the people responsible for the product and therefore also that they get to choose which way they fulfill their mandate. So that was that language. 3.3 is, like I said, reinstituting the automatic step up to E15 should they get their full waiver. And in 3.7 through 3.10, it essentially just recognizes that some biofuels wouldn't need a waiver granted, so it provides for another pathway for being a qualified biofuel.
All right. Representative Hamilton.
And, Madam Chair, just for clarification, are the corn growers and the other commodity groups okay with this language?
Yes, we can have. Would you like to come forward? Welcome to the committee, and if you would introduce yourself for the record, and if you heard the question, I think.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Valerie Jarek, and I represent the Minnesota Corn Growers and Minnesota Ethanol Producers Association. We were members on the task force. This is an agreement that we have been working on. This amendment now reflects some of the agreements that we have made with the refinery people and with the corn growers and with the Minnesota ethanol producers, and I believe Minnesota biofuels. So I think we're all okay with this as it stands right now.
All right. Any other questions? Okay. So we have the ACE. Thank you for your testimony. We have the A6 amendment before us as amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The motion prevails. That amendment's adopted. I do have another amendment that I will move, and that is the A10 amendment, which we'll distribute here. this is different. This is something we haven't heard, but it is talking about bio-based chemicals, bio-based content. It's a bill that will be introduced, but it's we're going to see if people would be amenable to put this into the Ag Policy Committee at this point. As just as a brief description for the A10, as we know, ethanol was the kind of the first generation. Then we've had next generation when it comes to biofuels. The same is true as we look at bio-based products. And as we're having greater advancement in technology, we're understanding that there are more products that can be created and more opportunities for growth within this industry. And so this is trying to change the next gen actual statute to reflect that we have some additional advancement in technology, and bio-based content means the chemical, polymer, monomer, or plastic that would be different from what we would ordinarily consider the bio-based. So that's what that's about, and Representative Faust has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know that I've used printers that have used soy ink in the past, and I know that some plastic bags are made out of corn product, and so this would be allowing research to be done on those types of products. Is that correct?
Representative Faust, I would believe that to be true. It would be, I know that I heard about it because I think there's some people in southwestern Minnesota, actually in Representative Hamilton's area or Representative Gunther's area. I think they brought forth the idea that there are a number of people who are chemical scientists who are looking at trying to develop this as for new products.
Yes. Okay. Well, very good. I think that's a very good idea.
But I thought Representative Faulk had a question.
Or maybe more of a comment, I think, to maybe offer some clarification. It's not so much, I think, the end-use products, but basically the things that would go into products. I mean, it's the chemical compositions.
Thank you. I think that's probably a better clarification. Ms. Gauthier, yes. We have somebody who would be able to speak to the amendment, and why don't you come forward, and that would be probably helpful. So introduce yourself for the record, please.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Amanda Billick. I am an energy policy specialist with the Great Plains Institute. I'm also here representing the Bioeconomy Coalition of Minnesota. This is an alliance of bio-based chemical, advanced biofuel, agriculture and environmental interests and businesses. And I also am a governor-appointed member of the Next Gen Energy Board. So the amendment before you would expand the scope of the Next Gen Board to include bio-based products in policy discussions and funding recommendations. It accomplishes this by adding a definition for bio-based content and formulated products, and then it directs the board to examine these opportunities for Minnesota. And this change is necessary because right now the board activities focus on the areas of renewable fuels and the use of biomass to produce electricity or thermal energy, which are very important to our state. But Minnesota also has a world-leading cluster of companies that use agricultural and forestry feedstocks to produce base materials that can replace petroleum as a source of material for a variety of consumer and industrial products and supplies, such as plastics, detergents, resins, coatings, cosmetics. So adding this language would allow the board to discuss ways to best achieve, one, energy independence, two, agricultural and natural resource sustainability, and three, rural economic vitality. These three elements do provide the statutory guidance for the board. The board is directed to consider how best to take advantage of Minnesota's abundant agricultural and forestry feedstocks. And since there is a lot of activity happening in our state for bio-based product development, adding this to the scope would fit nicely with the statutory language. And it also provides an opportunity to examine growth strategies that will take advantage of integrating bio-based content production with the existing biofuels and forest industry that we have in the state. This could be a significant value-added opportunity for our agricultural and forestry industry, and we think that it should be a part of the discussions at the board to examine best ways to help grow and support this industry, along with our other uses of biomass for fuels and electricity and thermal production.
Yes, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just wondering why this wasn't brought forward before as part of the original bill. Ma'am, are you representing, speaking for the NextGen board, or are you speaking for yourself? Or just wondering where this came from, this amendment that we just saw here just minutes ago.
Sure. Madam Chair, members, I'm speaking as an individual member of the board. I don't want to speak for the entire board. Also speaking for a coalition that is bringing this idea forward. And for my organization, we have had individual conversations with other appointed members of the board that are supportive of this change and see it as an opportunity to include in the discussions for the board. And I've had discussions with the Department of Agriculture about making this change, as well as past and current legislative members who serve on the board. Okay. And the second part of your question, which was about why it's coming before you as an amendment, we did have the bill introduced on the Senate side, and it was heard in committee, and will likely be included as part of the omnibus policy bill in the ag policy bill on the Senate side. And so it's just a timing issue in trying to get this as we move through to the committee deadlines.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the explanation of this as well. I guess my question would be, is there anybody opposed here today to this language?
That's a good question. Thank you. Is there anyone who would like to speak in opposition to this A-10 amendment, which is regarding changing the next generation board's scope of what they can be discussing and moving forward? I see none, but Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering if anybody is familiar enough to speak either for or against it, being the amendment, again, we just saw it a few minutes ago, and maybe it's a good thing. I don't know for sure, but I don't know if anybody is familiar enough to speak on it at this time.
Thank you, and do you want to speak about this?
I'm familiar with it.
If you would come to the table, please introduce yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Allie LaTurrell, and I'm a chemical executive. I work for a company called BioAmber that is headquartered here in Minneapolis in Plymouth. And I can speak to this, to broadening the scope of the board, because it would benefit a really rare opportunity for Minnesota to capitalize on a cluster of biotechnology companies that make the chemicals, monomers, et cetera, that go into plastic products, as well as coatings. Everything we see here in the room is made of chemicals, which is not sort of on the forefront of people's minds. But everything we see here in the room can be made of agricultural products in a fermentation process and bio-based. So this would expand the NextGen board to consider these types of projects for funding, something that's needed to get this industry to commercial scale. To give you an idea of our business, we spend $2.1 million a year on research and development here in Minneapolis at our laboratories. We've just hired 46 people in the last 11 months. We're scaling rapidly. Producing a bio-based chemical called succinic acid currently, and there's numerous benefits to this type of technology, not only environmental benefits. Our process, we're building a plant currently in Ontario and anticipate carbon-neutral chemical production, and that's from a bio-based process. So 99.6% less greenhouse gas emissions, and we make the same type of chemical that's made in a petrochemical process with 60% less energy. We also are supporters of broadening this scope, because although we've seen success, it's very difficult for this startup industry to do that critical research that the NextGen board provide funds for.
Thank you. Other comments or questions? All right. So I will move the A10 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails. That amendment's adopted. There are other amendments that have been brought to us.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And since we deleted that section about the water quality certification program, many of my amendments are not relevant. But, Madam Chair, if I could just speak to a couple of them real quick, if you would allow me the courtesy to do that. And since we have, yes.
Just tell me which ones you want so we can distribute.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the one that I would speak to here quickly would have been the A5 amendment. And this is, and thank you for allowing me the opportunity since we have the department and others in here. And this would be directed towards the department and to the chair of Ag Finance, Environment and Ag Finance. And basically what this would, what we're trying to look at through the water certification is clearly know what the people who sign up for this program so that they clearly understand what their roles would be, and then it would also allow them to have an opt-out as well. I mean, there's a way for them to be kicked out, but there's not a way for them to be opt-out. And again, just laying specifically out what their roles and responsibilities are. And so I'd just like the department to take a hard look at that, and we can discuss it at the next stop. So that would have been one, Madam Chair. The other one that I'd speak to is recommendations that the committee had. And on the original bill that you had, it would have been on line 16.20. After location, add business practices or financial data. And because the committee recommended that the data should be, they would have some privacy there, but those two words were excluded in the original bill. And so it did not offer them business practices or financial data to be secured and to be private. And so those were some of the things that we were trying to stress here during the original discussion of that water certification program as well. And so I hope that the department will be open some of these amendments as we move forward. And like Representative Anderson said and others, it's we're not opposed to the concept. We're just trying to address some of the concerns and make a program better, if you will. And so, again, we deleted that section, so these are no longer relevant for today's. But thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing me just to say a few words. And I'd ask the department to be open to some of these amendments when it hits the next stop.
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hamilton. Because I was aware that you were going to delete Article 2, I do not have, there is no one here today to speak to that, but I'd be happy to carry these amendments back to the department. Thank you, and we'd be happy to look at them and work with the authors of the bill, Madam Chair, and as we move forward. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, the other amendment I'd like to speak to is the A1 amendment, and it's about honeybee habitat program. And, Madam Chair, I believe you, along with Representative Torkelson, were working on this. And this basically what it would do is the Commissioner of Natural Resources shall establish a honeybee habitat program to provide enhanced honeybees and other pollinator habitat on state lands. And I believe, talking to you this morning, we're going to be hearing this bill separately now. Is that correct, Madam Chair?
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. This is a bill that, yes, you're correct. I'm authoring it with Representative Torkelson. It just received a Senate companion, so we are. It's possible for us to hear the bill, and we will do that tomorrow. I haven't actually communicated that with Representative Torkelson yet, but that we can hear it tomorrow. I think we might have I'm not sure that it's going to meet the deadlines that we need to for this year, because I'm looking at Representative Dill. I don't know if this bill will need to come before the Environment Policy Committee and where else it would need to go. But so.
Haven't seen it, and depends on how good the bill is, Madam Chair.
Well, it's a very good bill, of course, and certainly, as we are all aware, it's so important to have bipartisan support, and this bill does. So that is another positive about that. Yes, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I won't offer that one either, and. So I guess that concludes all the amendments, since we deleted that section. I would like to ask a question about the bill.
Yes, you may do that, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the department, is there any language in the bill whatsoever that would result in any type of fee increases being raised in this bill?
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Hamilton, for that question. To my knowledge, no, there is nothing in this bill that would incur any cost or any fee increase or any financial change for the department. No.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Well, there would be an increased cost to a borrower who paid back a loan early, correct, with this new language in the bill?
Ms. Gauthier.
Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, that would be correct, but that's not a cost to the department. That would be allowing the bondholders who purchase bonds from the state of Minnesota to obtain their full, it would not be a cost to the department, but it would be a cost to the borrower, and no longer would that be a cost to the state.
Any other questions regarding the bill as amended? All right. I would again move that House File 1071 as amended be referred to government operations, and we're going there because of some of the task force extensions and other things, that it be moved and passed to government operations. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The bill is moving on its way. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members.
We do have House File 473, and I am going to move to reconsider the vote on House File 473, which is in your packet. That is the finance bill, and we are going to move that. Okay. All in favor of that, I move to reconsider the vote on House File 473. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed, nay. That motion prevails. I'm not sure if we have any amendments.
Yes, I do have an amendment, Madam Chair. It is the A5 amendment.
Chair, just a procedural thing. I do think that we voted to reconsider, but now we need a motion before us to actually send this
thank
someplace.
You. Thank you. I move that House File 473 be recommended to pass and move to the Ag, Environment, Natural Resources Finance Committee. Thank you for that.
Then I once again move Amendment A5.
Now we can back up, yes, and move forward. Okay, so now we have the A5 amendment, which is coming around. This is, people are getting more and more clever on how they're writing these amendments, but I'm going to tell you that again, this is, even though it's now in language, not in actual numbers, kind of, it's in percentage, it is still a finance amendment. So this is one that I will still rule out of order for this committee, but I am giving Representative Faust an opportunity to at least explain, sort of like I did with Representative Hamilton, but you are getting a hearing tomorrow. So, Representative Faust, just...
Thank you, Chair Poppe. And I do appreciate that, and I do appreciate also your consistency in, no matter what party introduces that amendment, that you are consistent. So I appreciate that as well. One of the big problem that I had with House File 473 when we looked at it before was in this section, subdivision 4, I believe it is, that really just gave, for lack of a better way to put it, a blank check to the commissioner to decide wherever they wanted to put the money, they could put it without direction from the legislature, or very little direction, I guess would probably be the best way to put it. And I believe that it is not just the right, but the responsibility of the legislature to provide certainly a lot more direction than what was in the original bill. And so what this amendment does is it addresses, and you may not agree 100% with where I'm putting all of the money, that's fine. I understand that. Everyone's going to have a little bit difference of opinion. I met with the ag groups and discussed where they thought some of the money should go, and I tried to take into consideration what they said, as well as Representative Hamilton. And so we will be offering this as a bill, which I believe we'll have a hearing at the next stop, or at the Finance Committee. So hopefully we can add this on at that point in time as a separate bill that will become part of the omnibus bill. And I expected that this would probably not be ruled in order because we're still directing the money. But I guess I just have to encourage the department that in the future when we get bills that leave a blank hole in it like this, it's really hard for me, and I know it is for a lot of other people, to vote for that bill or for that type of a situation. And when we can't change that, we just really don't have a lot of options. And so I expected this wouldn't fly today, even though I directed Mr. Sullivan to write it in a way that it would work here, but he said that might be hard to do, so I'm not blaming him. He did the best he could, but thank you. So anyway, Madam Chair, I appreciate the time, and if somebody has input on this between now and a few hours from now when we submit the bill, I'd sure be willing to take it. So thank you.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and Representative Faust, I would just like to state for the record that when the department put our proposal together for Agri, we followed the law as it is written and currently stands right now, which says the commissioner shall determine and gives guidance to the commissioner for doing that. And the plan that we put together follows almost completely, word for word, area for area, the guidance that the legislature put into statute for the executive branch. So one person's gaping hole may be another person's following the law, Madam Chair. Just wanted to make that point. Thank you.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Faust. And to your point, Madam Chair, this is the reason why we didn't bring any amendments up here today specifically for this. I'd like to thank you and Chair Dill and Representative Erickson as far as on the last committee that we were in yesterday with some policy language in a Finance Committee. I want to thank you for that. So we're respecting that as well. Representative Faust, thank you. To recognize the whole ag education piece. And we were having a side conversation with Representative Johnson here as well, and he's saying, how can we work together to figure out a way to help support additionally the 4-H, the FFA, the Morrow programs, MEALC, and stuff like that. 4-H, the FFA, the Morrow programs, MEALC, and stuff like that. So I think collectively we can put our heads together and find some common ground here and figure out how to support those programs. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. So, Representative Falk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to be clear, speaking on behalf of the Environment, Natural Resources, and Ag Finance Committee, we will be doing a thorough legislative evaluation of the proposal, and we will be marking these things up. And, I mean, that's the committee where this will be taking place. And I just want to make sure that that's on the record, too, that you know, we're not subjugating some type of legislative oversight, but we will be doing that in the appropriate committee.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm just inquiring of the Chair some guidance here. As policy, we wanted to direct the commissioner as a policy issue as to the emphasis on education and so forth, what would be acceptable to the chair in regards to this particular committee?
What would be acceptable is changing the statute. Changing the statute that would indicate how the department could spend the dollars that they will have to spend with in a language I can for this particular purpose, if the bill were drafted that it was a suggestion for the department on how they could spend it, then it would be not, you know, we're saying that they must spend the dollars this way. And if we were suggesting that, you know, here are some additional ways to allocate those funds, that would be appropriate for an amendment like that. But the other piece is going back to the original statute and expanding the scope of how money could be allocated. That would include like youth development or ag education. Then I think you'd have a greater opportunity. But it's kind of, in my mind, it's two concepts here. One is, do we direct the department on how to spend the dollars? And that's one piece. And the other is, do we broaden the categories of how they could spend those dollars? And I think Representative Anderson, if I understand correctly, did that last year, expanded kind of the scope of how they could spend the dollars, including blender pumps. But as since that hasn't actually happened, that they're now spending dollars on blender pumps, he's trying to go another step further to say, but I want you to spend some money on blender pumps. By misrepresenting what your position is, Representative Anderson. But so I think that that's, so it's kind of a two-step process perhaps, but one step is to say in the statute we're broadening how we are allowing you to spend those dollars, and then the next step may be, if the department isn't doing it in the way that people want it to be, then to do the bills or amendments to say this is how we'd like that money spent. Is that clear as can be, Representative Petersburg?
Yeah, thank you. I think it's getting there. The question for me is just, how do we, if we want as policy that these are issues that we really want to be promoting and so forth, and we can't talk about dollars, then we have no way of indicating our value based on that per se, and certainly the Finance Committee then can take our recommendations and change it anyway. And so the question for me is how do we give any kind of a percentage or value or weight on various policy decisions we want if anything that talks about funding isn't an option, because we know that it's always changing. And so I'm thankful for clarification that you can give us just so that we know in the future how we can handle situations where we want this to be an important piece and we want to give the authority to spend it, not necessarily that we dictate the dollars, but how do we present that in such a way in which those policy decisions can be implemented. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Polk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess to Representative Petersburg, part of that is, I mean, you could put a bill in and then ask the chair of the Finance Committee for a hearing. I mean, I can't speak as to whether or not she would give you one. That's her determination, but I mean, that's the simplest process, just to, you know, draft a bill and when it's referred to the appropriate committee, request a hearing.
Yes, Representative Petersburg.
Well, I appreciate that, but I'm not, I'm more interested about the policy of that these need to be going forward. Finances, I don't believe, then has responsibility of determining whether or not the policy is a valid or not, only how much money goes into that particular policy. And so therefore, there's kind of a tension between those two committees in regards to that, and I'm just trying to figure out ways in which we can address those concerns.
All right. Representative Faust, is it to this point?
No, it is not.
Okay, and Representative Anderson to this point? Otherwise, we've got Representative Johnson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I would build on that. I've been asking that question all week. But I'm less interested in the specific dollars to go to it because I don't see that as the jurisdiction of this committee. That's what I learned over the last couple of weeks, and I accept that. I think that makes good sense. But am I hearing correctly now that if would this be the time to add, in a sense, in my mind, add a category for using those funds that would be just generally agricultural education to enable the Ag Department to if they so choose, to support that some funding towards that, which would be done in another committee. But would that be appropriate now?
I think not for this bill. Actually, I'm not sure. And this, yes, I think that you could do that. You could add language that would say, but I'm not sure if it's in this bill or if it's, I'd have to find where you would do it here.
Madam Chair, it would be my guess that it would be where the agri programs are that, within that language, just to kind of give authority to include a fifth area that would be agricultural education. That's really where my head's been at for the last week.
In anticipation of this and or in preparation for this, I'm going to distribute an amendment that we will have a little bit of discussion about. And it is drafted to the Ag Policy Bill, but it may be part of what you're looking for. So this is for purposes of discussion at this point. Yes, it is. This is drafted for the ag policy, and I chose not to bring it forward on the ag policy, but it's my... this is what I have been looking for as far as language that would address what the scope of what the department can spend their dollars on. It speaks to the ag education and youth development, which is what many people have been discussing. Now, this the reason why I am bringing it forward now is just because we're in that discussion, we're talking about it. I'm not sure if it actually, there was a reason why the bill was developed originally, the statute was developed the way it was. It's economic development. And looking at economic development for many people means you're putting money into something that actually is going to grow jobs and grow the industry and assist in agribusiness. This is a departure from that. This is a departure in a way that we are bringing in youth development and ag education and trying to develop long term those kinds of results, but it's not as immediate of a result. So I'm just but I'm suggesting that this is the kind of language that I think would be appropriate in this committee to be dealing with. Now, this is not a bill. This was only an amendment. And much like an earlier discussion regarding bringing something forward with little time for discussion and little awareness of what the impact is, I am not at this point ready to say this is what we want to do. Because I think we do need to have some history about why it was created the way it was. And although I am would like to see us do some things in youth development and education, I'm not sure that we're ready for that at this point. So I'm just distributing this as kind of for an awareness factor, and for us as a committee and as policymakers, I do think that it is incumbent upon us to be considering how we want to make that fund the best fund for the future of agriculture. So I don't know if there's any other discussion. I've talked long enough about this, but so we do have, and you have your amendment before us, Representative Faust. Did you withdraw your amendment? I will rule that amendment out of order. This one is out of order because it's not for this bill anyway, so this is not an amendment for this bill. So we have House File 473 before us, and I'm Representative Faust.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do, we did discuss Section 4, 9.32 before, and my understanding is that there are going to be some changes made to that in the next committee, and you don't need to go into any more detail than that, Ms. Gauthier, other than to tell me that my understanding is correct about that.
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry I missed all of your question. I'm trying to speak with some of our staff about the amendment just handed out and what financial issues that may raise for the department, but if you could repeat it, please.
Yes, no problem. On line 9.32, the section for the Board of Animal Health, my understanding is that there is going to be some changes made to that in the next committee stop, which I'm fine that that's the way it's going to be taken care of, but I just wanted to make sure that was my assumption is correct on that.
Ms. Bethia.
Madam Chair and Representative Faust, that's my understanding.
Yes, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for keeping things in order today. It's been a good meeting. I would just add my thoughts on this whole process on 473 and the $20 million that we are allocated here, left over from the ethanol payments. And I know there was a group that got together last summer, and Ms. Gauthier, I got some emails from her about the general direction they were going and the four areas that the money was going to be allocated to. But I think my frustration is I didn't realize that they would have literally every penny allocated in each of those four areas. I thought that there would be those areas and there would be some wiggle room, if you'd want to call it that. For example, you know, the blender pumps, it's talked about in language, but now they don't seem to want to accept a specific number for blender pumps, just in my case. But so I just think the frustration was that it seemed to be so locked in that every dollar was already allocated in that group that met last summer, I guess is what my frustration is.
All right, Ms.
Gauthier. Madam Chair, thank you. Representative Anderson. And you're right, that plan that we shared with you and the other leadership of the two House and Senate Finance Ag committees, that was locked because we had a $2.3 million appropriation for fiscal year 13 that we were directed by the legislature to spend on the purposes statutorily outlined for Agri. So we did, and those amounts were written out as our goals for each of those categories because we wanted to be very transparent and clear about how we were going to try to allocate the $2.3 million. We have had flexibility, however, in those amounts for each of those four purposes, being livestock investment grants and ag value-added development and so forth, next gen. And we still, the department believes that the current law gives the commissioner flexibility, and that is why we favor the current law, because the plan that we presented now, I'm talking about for 14-15, is our best estimate based on everybody that we've spoken to of what we believe the demand for those programs will be. Having been based on our experience with the $2.3 million, which was appropriated to the department for agri purposes for the current fiscal year. So this is a new effort, and we may find out that one area has a far greater demand than we anticipated, perhaps livestock investment grants. And another area has less demand than we anticipated, then the commissioner does have the authority right now to move that money to something which has a higher demand. Blender pumps are something that is allowed statutorily for the Next Gen Energy Board and for Agri. And the Next Gen Energy Board would certainly accept those any proposals for blender pumps. For funding for them. I do not believe that the last cycle of funding for the Next Gen Energy Board, which was in fiscal year 12, I believe there were no applications that would have funded blender pumps made to the board. They were all research applications, which is fine, but just to be clear, that hasn't really come up before the Next Gen Energy Board because no one's asked for it. However, having said that, the department is working very hard to on issues related to increasing the use of biofuel in Minnesota. So just to clarify, the plan you saw did have numbers on it, and those were estimates. We do have flexibility, and the same thing holds true for the plan that the department has for 14-15.
Thank you. And just a reminder, we are supposed to be done, so we're running a little over. Representative Fitzsimmons.
Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you. I'm just, you know, with some of these things out of order and some of the discussion, the question I'm coming up with then is this bill is before us, and so what exactly is this committee's purview over this bill?
Thank you, Representative Fitzsimmons. This is a policy committee, so it's the policy of what's the how the dollars are to be used.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Representative Hamilton. I apologize.
I'll pass.
Okay. All right. Well, we do have House File 473 before us. Move, and I will again move to re-refer House File 473 to be recommended to pass and be referred to Ag, Environment, Natural Resources, Finance Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you. We'll see you tomorrow. We have a couple of bills tomorrow.